Mansfield Park by Jane Austen, dramatised in 3 episodes by Elizabeth Proud, with Hannah Gordon as Jane Austen, Michael Williams as Sir Thomas Bertram, Jane Lapoterre as Mrs. Norris, and Amanda Root as Fanny. Episode 2. Mr. Crawford Changes Tack.
The scheme of acting lovers' vows at Mansfield Park was by no means given up, despite Edmund's disapprobation. Theatre, scenery and dresses were all getting forward, but one part had not been cast. Anholt, who was to be made love to by Miss Crawford as Amelia. Tom, Maria and Mr. Yates were in committee at a table in the drawing room.
Mr. Edmund Bertram, if any part could tempt you to act, I suppose it would be Anholt. For he is a clergyman, you know.
That circumstance would by no means tempt me.
Fanny, we want your services.
Yes, Tom?
We want you in our play. You must be Cottager's wife.
Ooh, me? Indeed, you must excuse me.
It need not frighten you. Only half a dozen speeches.
If you're afraid of half a dozen speeches, what would you do with 42 to learn, like me?
It is not that I am afraid of learning by heart, but I really cannot act.
Yes, you can.
No, indeed, Mr. Bertram. You must excuse me, indeed you must.
What a piece of work here is about nothing. Take the part with good grace, Fanny, and let us hear no more of the matter.
Do not urge her, madam. It is not fair.
I'm not going to urge her. But I shall think her an obstinate, ungrateful girl if she does not do what her cousins wish her, considering who and what she is.
Good heaven, this place is too hot for me. Never mind, my dear Miss Price. This is a cross evening. Have you heard from your brother lately?
Miss Crawford, there will not be the smallest difficulty in finding an Anholt. We have but to speak the word. Tom Oliver is a very clever fellow, or Charles Maddox. Oh,
Mansfield theatricals will enliven the whole neighbourhood, it seems.
The next morning, Fanny's nerves were still agitated.
To be called into notice in such a manner, and to be told I am obstinate and ungrateful. Oh, I do not know what to do. Am I right to refuse to act? At least Edmund agrees with me. Oh, come in. Cousin Edmund.
Can I speak to you, Fanny, for a few minutes? I want to consult. I want your opinion.
My opinion?
Yes, I do not know what to do. This acting scheme gets worse and worse. They are going to ask the help of Charles Maddox.
Oh.
This must, if possible, be prevented. Do not you see it in the same light?
Yes, but your brother is so determined.
There is but one thing to be done. I must take Anholt myself.
Oh, but...
It is not at all what I like to be driven into appearance of such inconsistency after being known to oppose the scheme from the beginning. But I can think of no other alternative. Can you, Fanny?
Not immediately, but...
But what? I see your judgment is not with me. Put yourself in Miss Crawford's place. Consider what it would be to act Amelia with a stranger.
I am sorry for her, but I am more sorry to see you drawn to do what you know will be disagreeable to my uncle. It will be such a triumph to the others.
They will not have much cause of triumph when they see how infamously I act. But by this concession, I hope to persuade them to confine the performance to Mrs. Rushworth and the Grants. Will not this be worth gaining?
Yes, it will be a great point.
Give me your approbation then, Fanny. I am not comfortable without it.
Oh, cousin.
If you are against me, I ought to distrust myself. But it is absolutely impossible to let Tom go on in this way. I thought he would have entered more into Miss Crawford's feelings.
No doubt it will be a great relief to her. I am glad to have her spared.
Good. I could not be easy until I had spoken to you and come to a decision. Do not stay here without a fire.
Edmund, to be acting. After all his objections, can it be possible? Edmund, so inconsistent. Is he not deceiving himself? Alas, it is all Miss Crawford's doing. Her influence. Oh, Edmund. It is all misery now.
Tom and Maria were delighted. Such a victory over Edmund's discretion had been beyond their hopes.
There is nothing now to disturb us in our darling project.
Perhaps Perhaps Fanny may be more disposed to oblige us now.
No, she is quite determined. She certainly will not act.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Miss Crawford.
I come with excellent news. At my earnest request, Mrs. Grant has agreed to undertake the part of cottager's wife. And here she is. So Miss Price may rest easy. Thank you, Miss Grant.
Oh, to have to be obliged to Miss Crawford. She comes with looks of gaiety, which seem an insult. And to see Edmund happy as well makes me wretched.
Julia was wretched too.
Henry Crawford has trifled with my feelings.
And either sat in gloomy silence or allowing the attentions of Mr. Yates.
I rather wonder Julia is not in love with Henry.
I imagine both sisters are.
Both? No. Oh, no, that must not be. Think of Mr. Rushworth.
I often think of Mr. Rushworth's property and wish it in other hands. But I never think of him. A man might represent the county with that estate.
Oh, I dare say he will. When Sir Thomas comes, I dare say Mr. Rushworth will be in for some borough.
Sir Thomas is to achieve mighty things when he comes home.
Oh, you'll find him very just and reasonable, I assure you. I do not think we do so well without him. Lady Bertram seems more of a cipher now, and nobody else can keep Mrs. Norris in order. Oh, but Mary, do not fancy that Maria Bertram cares for Henry.
I would not give much for Mr. Rushworth's chance if Henry stepped in before the articles were signed.
Everything for the play was now in a regular train, and Fanny derived as much innocent enjoyment as any of them, sometimes as prompter, sometimes as spectator. There was also a great deal of needlework to be done.
Ah, come, Fanny. Give me your help in putting Mr. Rushworth's cloak together. There are but three seams. You may do them in a trice.
Yes, Aunt Norris.
Of course, sister, this is all new to Fanny, you know. But you and I used to be very fond of a play, and so am I still. What is the play about, Fanny?
Sister, pray do not ask her now. For Fanny is not one of those who can talk and work at the same time. It is about lovers' vows.
I believe there will be three acts rehearsed tomorrow evening, and that will give you an opportunity of seeing all the actors at once.
Oh, you'd better wait till the curtain is hung. There's very little sense in a play without a curtain.
Very well, sister. I dare say you are right.
Fanny!
Third act. Cousin Edmund and Miss Crawford will be acting together for the first time. And their scene, oh, such a scene, all about love. I do not believe they have rehearsed it, even in private.
Oh, am I right? Oh, is this the East Room?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my dear Miss Price, I beg your pardon, but I have made my way to you on purpose to entreat your help.
My help? Oh, please, come in, Miss Crawford. I'm afraid there's no fire.
Thank you, I am quite warm, very warm. I want you to have the goodness to hear me my third act. I do not think I could go through it with Edmund till I've hardened myself a little, for really there is a speech or two. Will you?
Well, I will do my best, Miss Crawford.
Have you ever happened to look at the part I mean?
I
did not think much of it at first, but upon my word... There, look at that speech. And that, how am I to look him in the face and say such things? You must rehearse it with me that I might get on by degrees. You have a look of his sometimes.
Have I?
Well, I will do my best. You are to have the book. Oh, could Sir Thomas look in upon us just now, he would bless himself, for we are rehearsing all over the house. Well, now for my soliloquy. Oh, who can that be?
Fanny, I hope I don't... Miss Crawford?
Mr. Bertram!
I came to ask Fanny to rehearse with me. I had no idea Miss Crawford was in the house.
I came on the self-same errand.
Then we must now rehearse together.
Oh, but Mr. Bertram...
Yes, I entreat. What could be more happy? And with Fanny to prompt and observe us.
If you wish it, cousin.
That evening, all were alert and impatient.
We need more candles here.
And some more chairs.
Everybody here.
The Crawfords are not come yet. Oh. Mrs. Grant. Julia is sulking and will not come. Here is Mr. Crawford.
We came as fast as we could.
But where is Mrs. Grant?
She cannot come. Dr. Grant is unwell and cannot spare his wife this evening.
Oh, but we cannot act without Mrs. Grant.
The whole evening is destroyed.
Oh, it is too bad.
What about your cousin, Bertram?
Fanny, but she's...
If she would be so good as to read the...
We might manage. Oh, do, Miss Price.
Oh, please, Fanny.
Do, Fanny. If it is not very disagreeable to you.
Oh, why did I not go to my own room? I knew this rehearsal would distress me.
They are waiting.
You have only to read the part. She could put Mrs. Grant right the other day in 20 places. Fanny, I am sure you know the part.
Please, Fanny.
Very well. I will do my best.
Good. Then we better begin. Quiet, everyone. Places, please. Curtain. Up.
Tom! Edmund!
Why, Julia, what do you hear? Close the door. We are just now beginning.
My father has come. He is in the hall at this moment.
What?
Be in my own home once more. But where is Fanny? Why do I not see my little Fanny? There she is. My dear Fanny, come and give me a kiss. Why, how much you have grown. You have vastly improved, my dear.
Thank you, sir. Welcome home.
It is very good to be home, Fanny, and to find you all collected here exactly as I could have wished. Mr. Rushworth, too. I could have asked nothing better than to meet you straight away, Mr. Rushworth.
Oh, thank you, Sir Thomas.
How do you think the young people have been amusing themselves lately, Sir Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
They have been acting. We have been all alive with acting.
Indeed. And what have you been acting?
They'll tell you all about it.
It is not worthwhile to bore my father with it now. We have just been trying, sir, to get up a few scenes, a mere trifle. We have had such incessant rains almost since October began that I have hardly taken out a gun since the 3rd.
I'm sure you must be hungry, Sir Thomas. A basin of soup, perhaps?
No, Mrs. Norris, I will wait for tea.
Well, suppose you hurry badly a little, Lady Bertram. He seems behindhand tonight.
Mm. Yes, and in the meantime, I think I shall just go and look into my own dear room. Then I shall feel that I am truly at home.
Something must be done.
Sir Thomas is most gracious, my dear. You did not tell me.
Where did you leave Miss Crawford and her brother, Fanny?
They sent their apologies and decided it would be better to leave.
Then poor Yates is all alone. I must...
After you, Mr. Yates. I come from your theatre, Tom, when I made the acquaintance of your friend. I find myself in it rather unexpectedly. Its vicinity to my own room, in every respect indeed, it took me by surprise, as I had not any suspicion of your acting having assumed so serious a character. Edmund, on your judgment I depended. What have you been about?
Sir, I...
To own truth, Sir Thomas, we were in the middle of a rehearsal when you arrived. Our company is now dispersed from the Crawfords being gone home, so nothing can be done tonight.
No, indeed.
But if you will give us the honour of your company tomorrow evening, I should not be afraid of the result. We bespeak your indulgence, you understand.
My indulgence shall be given, sir, but without any other rehearsal.
Oh.
Mr. and Miss Crawford were mentioned in the last letters from Mansfield. Do you find them agreeable acquaintance?
Mr. Crawford is a most pleasant, gentlemanlike man, and his sister is a sweet, pretty, elegant, lively girl.
I do not say he is not gentlemanlike, but you should tell your father he is not above 5'8", or he will be expecting a well-looking man. If I must say what I think, in my opinion... It is very disagreeable to be always rehearsing. I think we are a great deal better employed sitting comfortably here among ourselves and doing nothing.
I am happy to find our sentiments on this subject so much the same, Mr. Rushworth.
Ah.
It gives me sincere satisfaction.
Edmund's first object the next morning was to give his father a fair statement of the whole acting scheme.
We have all been more or less to blame, except Fanny. Mm. Fanny is the only one who has judged rightly throughout, who has been consistent. Her feelings have been steadily against it from first to last. She never ceased to think of what was due to you.
It shall all be forgotten as soon as the house is restored to its former state. An immediate conclusion of everything will be sufficient for proof.
Maria was now in a good deal of agitation. Mr. Rushworth had set off early for Southerton.
If Mr. Crawford would only declare himself to my father, Mr. Rushworth might be spared the trouble of coming back.
But they saw no one from the parsonage until the following day, when Mr. Crawford walked up with Dr. Grant.
I was anxious to pay my respects as soon as possible, Sir Thomas.
How good of you to call so early, Dr. Grant.
Not at all, Thomas. Bertram, is there any plan for resuming the play? If so, I shall make a point of returning to Mansfield. I am to meet my uncle at Bath, but I can attend you at an hour's notice.
I am sorry you are going, Crawford. But as to our play, that is all over. Very little will remain of the theatre by tomorrow. When do you go?
I may perhaps get as far as Banbury today.
He is going and intending to stay away. After all he said, and all he looked.
Yes, he was gone. And so ended all the hopes his selfish vanity had raised in Maria and Julia Bertram.
I rejoice in his going. His presence is odious to me now, but poor Maria. What a blessing that he has gone.
I wonder that his falling in love with Julia came to nothing.
Mr. Yates was gone likewise.
And I hope now to be rid of everything that might remind me of lovers' vows.
Mrs. Norris contrived to remove one article that might have distressed him, the curtain.
I happen to be particularly in want of green baize.
And Mansfield was an altered place.
I regret the loss of the Grant Company. I am afraid they may feel themselves neglected. And they are exactly the sort of people my father would like, if he knew them better. We are sometimes a little dull among ourselves. My sisters seem out of spirits, and Tom is certainly not at his ease. Dr. and Mrs. Grant would make our evenings pass away with more enjoyment, even to my father.
Do you think so? I think my uncle values the quietness you speak of. And it does not appear to me that we are more serious than we used to be before he went abroad. There was never much laughing in his presence.
I believe you are right. I believe our evenings are rather returned to what they were than assuming a new character. The novelty was in their being lively.
Oh, but I love to hear my uncle talk of the West Indies.
And your uncle thinks you very pretty, dear Fanny. Your complexion is so improved, and your figure...
Oh.
Nay, Fanny, do not turn away. It is but an uncle. You must really begin to harden yourself to the idea of being worth looking at.
Oh, don't talk so, don't talk so.
Seriously, Fanny, your uncle is pleased with you in every respect. And I only wish you would talk to him more.
But I do talk to him more than I used. Did not you hear me ask him about the slave trade last night?
I did, and was in hopes the question would be followed up by others.
And I longed to do it, but there was such a dead silence. I thought it would appear as if I wanted to set myself off at my cousin's expense.
Miss Crawford was right about you. You seem almost as fearful of notice and praise as other women are of neglect. She has great discernment. I know nobody who distinguishes characters better. I wonder what she thinks of my father. I wish they met more frequently. I hope she does not suppose there is any dislike on his side.
Well, she must know herself too secure of the regard of all the rest of you to have any such apprehension. Tomorrow I think my uncle dines at Southerton. I hope he may continue to like Mr. Rushworth.
That is impossible. He must like him less after tomorrow, for we shall be 5 hours in his company.
Indeed, Sir Thomas could no longer deceive himself about his future son-in-law and began to feel grave on Maria's account.
Maria, I desire to know your wishes openly and sincerely. I fear you do not, cannot, like Mr. Rushworth. In which case, your happiness must not be sacrificed. The connection can be given up, my dear.
You are very kind, Father, but you are quite mistaken. I have not the smallest desire to break my engagement. I esteem Mr. Rushworth's character and have no doubt of my happiness with him.
Well, I am glad to hear it. To be sure, Mr. Rushworth is young enough to improve in good society.
Had Sir Thomas applied to his daughter within the first few days after Crawford's leaving Mansfield, her answer might have been different.
No letter, no message, nothing. He may have destroyed my happiness, but he shall never know it. I must escape from Mansfield and console myself with bustle and the world.
To such feelings, delay, even the delay of much preparation, would have been an evil. It was a very proper wedding. The bride was elegantly dressed, the two bridesmaids duly inferior. Her father gave her away, her mother stood with salts in her hand, expecting to be agitated, her aunt tried to cry, and the service was impressively read by Dr. Grant. It was done, and they were gone. Their plan was to proceed to Brighton for some weeks, and Julia was to go with them. Since rivalry between the two sisters had ceased, they had recovered much of their former good understanding, and Julia was quite as eager for novelty as Maria. Tom, too, was gone to join friends in London. Fanny's consequence increased on the departure of her cousins, not only at home, but at the parsonage, where, in the gloom of November, she became a welcome guest.
I cannot believe that I've been here nearly 5 months, and moreover, the quietest 5 months I ever passed.
Too quiet for you, I believe.
Oh, I should have thought so, theoretically, but take it all in all, I never spent so happy a summer. I'm far better reconciled to a country residence than I ever expected to be, for half the year. An elegant, moderate-sized house, commanding the first society in the neighbourhood. Ah, here he is, my sister and Mr. Bertram. I'm so glad his brother is gone that he may be Mr. Bertram again. There is something in the sound of Mr. Edmund Bertram, so younger brother-like, I detest it.
How differently we feel. To me, it is a name of kings, princes and knights.
I grant you, Lord Edmund or Sir Edmund sound delightfully. Well, shall we join them?
There, Mr. Bertram, I told you they were walking in the shrubbery.
3 o'clock. I have been absent longer than I thought. My aunt was
there
surely...
There you are, Fanny.
Miss Bryce.
My mother was inquiring for you, so I walked down to bring you back.
Oh, forgive me, Miss Crawford. I must...
No, do not hurry away. We will go together. I will take my leave, Mrs. Grant. Miss Crawford. My respects to the doctor.
Oh, will you not do us the honour of dining with us tomorrow, Mr. Bertram? My husband wished me particularly to ask you. And Miss Price. May we have the pleasure of your company, too?
Oh. Well, upon my word, Fanny, you're in high luck. I hope you're aware that if your cousin Julia was at home, you would not have been asked at all.
I am much obliged to my Aunt Bertram for sparing me. I'm just now endeavouring to put her work in order so as to prevent her missing.
Oh, depend upon it. Your aunt can do very well without you, or you would not be allowed to go. Well, I hope you'll find it all mighty delightful. But I must observe that 5 is a very awkward number to sit down to table. And such a wide table, too. And remember, you are to stay just as long as Edmund chooses. Leave him to settle that.
Yes, ma'am. I shouldn't think of anything else.
And if it should rain, which I think exceedingly likely, for I never saw it more threatening for a wet evening in my life, you must manage as well as you can, and not be expecting the carriage to be sent for you.
No, Aunt.
Oh, Fanny, there you are. At what time would you have the carriage come round?
My dear Sir Thomas, Fanny can walk.
Walk? My niece walked to a dinner engagement at this time of the year. Will 20 minutes after 4 suit you, Fanny?
Oh,
Yes, sir.
Quite unnecessary. A great deal too kind. But Edmund goes, true. It is upon Edmund's account. I observed he was hoarse on Thursday night.
Now, Fanny, as well as I can judge by this light, you look very nicely indeed.
Oh, I hope it is not too fine. It is the dress my uncle gave me on my cousin's marriage.
A woman can never be too fine while she is all in white.
Oh.
Has not Miss Crawford a gown something the same?
Yes. Well, I
here is the coach house now. Heyday, here's company. Here's a carriage. Who have they got to meet us? It is Crawford's barouche, I protest. This is quite a surprise, Fanny. I will be very glad to see him.
After dinner, Edmund and Dr. Grant were engaged apart in a matter of business.
So, Bertram, you are to be ordained at Christmas, eh?
Yes, sir, at Peterborough.
Ah, Peterborough.
Well, Rushworth and his fair bride are at Brighton, I understand. Happy man.
Yes, they have been there about a fortnight, Miss Price, have they not? And Julia is with them.
Then Mr. Yates, I presume, is not far off.
Oh, I think Julia knows better than to mention him in her letters, don't you, Miss Price?
Poor Rushworth and his 42 speeches. She is too good for him. Much too good. I shall always look back on our theatricals with exquisite pleasure. I never was happier.
Never happier than when behaving so dishonourably. Oh, what a corrupted mind.
We were unlucky. Another week would have been enough. I think, if we had had the government of the winds, we would have indulged ourselves with a week's calm in the Atlantic at that season. What say you, Miss Price, eh?
As far as I am concerned, sir, I would not have delayed my uncle's return for a day. He disapproved it also entirely when he did arrive, that in my opinion everything had gone quite far enough.
I believe you are right. It was more pleasant than prudent. We were getting too noisy.
In regard to the collection of tithes, you must be certain...
Those gentlemen must have some very interesting point to discuss.
The most interesting in the world, money.
Ah.
Dr. Grant is instructing Bertram about the living he is to step into when he takes orders. I'm glad to hear he is to be so well off. 700 a year. And as, of course, he will live at home, it will be all for his menu plaisir.
Nothing amuses me more than the easy manner with which everybody settles the abundance of those who have a great deal less than themselves. You would look rather blank, Henry, if your menu plaisir were limited to 700 a year.
Yes, but all that, you know, is entirely comparative. Bertram, I shall make a point of coming to hear you preach your first sermon.
Ah,
Miss Price, will you not join me? We will provide ourselves with tablets and pencil to note down any sentence preeminently beautiful.
Alas, he can feel nothing as he ought.
Well, Mary, I've sent for my hunters. I shall give another fortnight to Mansfield.
Oh, I'm delighted to hear it.
And how do you think I mean to amuse myself?
You will walk and ride with me, to be sure.
Not exactly. My plan is to make Fanny Price in love with me.
Nonsense. No, no. Be satisfied with her two cousins.
But I cannot be satisfied without making a small hole in Fanny Price's heart. You do not seem sensible of the wonderful improvement that has taken place in her looks. She is now absolutely pretty.
Fool. The truth is that she was the only girl last night for you to notice, and you must have a somebody. I have always thought her pretty. Her eyes should be darker, but she has a sweet smile.
I do not quite know what to make of her. Why does she draw back and look so grave at me? Her looks say, I will not like you, and I say she shall.
Ah, so this is her attraction. Her not caring about you. I do desire that you will not be making her really unhappy. For she is as good a little creature as ever lived, and has a great deal of feeling.
It can be but for a fortnight. I will not do her any harm, dear little soul.
About this time, Fanny had a letter from her dearly loved brother, William.
He is in England again, and will soon be amongst us.
The affection between William and Fanny was striking. Fanny's attractions for Henry Crawford increased. for the sensibility which illumined her countenance was an attraction in itself.
It would be something to be loved by such a girl, to excite the first ardours of her unsophisticated mind. She interests me more than I had foreseen. A fortnight is not enough.
The intercourse of the two families was at this period nearly restored to what it had been. The return of Henry Crawford and the arrival of William had much to do with it, but something was owing to Sir Thomas's perception that
the Grants and their young inmates are really worth visiting. Besides, it seems to me that Mr. Crawford is somewhat distinguishing Fanny.
Indeed, he finally agreed that the whole family should dine at the parsonage. The meeting was a pleasant one, the dinner itself elegant and plentiful, according to the usual style of the Grants.
That wide table, though, puts me quite out of patience. And it is impossible among so many dishes, but that some must be cold.
And in the evening, there was cards.
What shall I do, Sir Thomas? Whist or speculation? Which will amuse me most?
Speculation.
As a whist player himself, he perhaps felt that it would not much amuse him to have his wife as a partner.
Very well, then, speculation, if you please, Mrs. Grant. I know nothing about it, but Fanny must teach me.
Oh, but I've never played the game or seen it played in my life, Arnold.
Oh, dear.
Nothing can be so easy, Lady Bertram.
It must be the easiest game on the card, Anne Bertram.
Is it, William? Are you sure?
If I might be allowed to sit between her ladyship and Miss Price and teach them both?
Capybill.
So it was settled. Sir Thomas, Mrs. Norris, and Dr. and Mrs. Grant were seated at the table of prime intellectual state and dignity, while the remaining six were arranged round the other.
A very odd game. I do not know what it is all about. I am never to see my cards, and Mr. Crawford does all the rest.
Bertram, I have never told you what happened to me yesterday in my ride home.
After your horse flung his shoe?
Yes. I lost my way after passing that old farmhouse with the yew trees, because I can never bear to ask. And then I found myself in a retired little village between gently rising hills, a small stream before me, a church standing on a sort of knoll to my right, and not a gentleman's house to be seen, excepting one, to be presumed the parsonage, within a stone's throw of said knoll and church. In short, Thornton Lacey.
Sounds like it. Did you inquire?
I never inquired. But I told a man mending a hedge that it was Thornton Lacey, and he agreed to it.
Thornton Lacey is to be Edmund's living, you know, Miss Crawford.
Indeed. Mr. Price, will you take this for your name?
No, Miss Crawford. I cannot let him go so cheaply.
Well, Crawford, and how did you like what you saw?
Very much. You are a lucky fellow. There will be work for 5 summers before the place is livable.
Not so bad as that. The farmyard must be moved, I grant you, but I am not aware of anything else.
The farmyard must be cleared away entirely and planted up to shut out the blacksmith's shop. The house must be turned to front the east. The entrance and principal rooms, I mean, must be on that side, where the view is really very pretty. You must make a new garden at what is now the back of the house, and something must be done with the stream, but I could not determine what. I had 2 or 3 ideas.
And I have 2 or 3 ideas also, and one of them is that very little of your plan will ever be put into practice. I must be satisfied with rather less.
Very well, Mr. Price. You drive a hard bargain.
Indeed, Miss Crawford. The knave is yours.
There. No cold prudence for me. If I lose the game, it shall not be from not striving for it.
The game is yours, Miss Crawford. But we'll not pay you, I believe.
Excellent.
Another deal.
Oh, yes.
Excellent.
Just hand me a little bit of your hands.
My plan may not be the best, but you must do a good deal. Mm. Oh, excuse me, your ladyship must not see your cards. There, let them lie just before you. The place deserves it, Bertram. It is a roomy, mansion-like looking house.
It is a pleasant house.
But it is capable of much more. You think with me, I hope, Miss Price. Have you ever seen the place?
No. My queen, William. Yes, I think you may have her.
No, you must not part with the queen. Your brother does not offer half her value. No, sir, hands off, hands off. The game will be yours, Miss Price.
And Fanny had much rather it were William's. Poor Fanny, not allowed to cheat herself as she wishes.
There. You see?
Oh. Mr. Bertram, you know Henry to be such a capital improver that you cannot possibly engage in anything of the sort at Thornton Lacey without his help. Only think how useful he was at Southerton. What was done there is not to be told.
Now, Mary. I cannot say there was much done at Southerton.
I should be sorry to have my powers of planning judged off by the day at Southerton, Miss Price. I see things very differently now. Do not think of me as I appeared then. I have another scheme about Thornton Lacey. I want to rent the house myself, so as to perfect the friendship that has arisen between our families.
Sir Thomas, perhaps you heard me telling Miss Price that I want to be your neighbour. May I hope for your not influencing your son against such a tenant?
It is the only way, sir, in which I could not wish you established as a neighbour. But I hope and believe that Edmund will occupy his own house at Thornton Lacey. Edmund, am I saying too much?
Too much about what, sir?
Mr. Crawford here wants to rent Thornton Lacey. But I tell him you intend to live there yourself.
Certainly, sir, I have no idea but of residence. But Crawford, though I refuse you as a tenant, come to me as a friend. Consider the house half your own every winter.
Oh, we shall be the losers. His going will be an unwelcome contraction of our family circle. But a parish has needs, Mr. Crawford, which can be known only by a clergyman constantly resident. Edmund might be at Thornton Lacey every seventh day for a few hours, if that would content him, but it will not. He knows that if he does not live among his parishioners and prove himself their friend, he does very little either for their good or his own.
I see.
Alas, not to see Edmund every day. I had not thought he was to live at Thornton Lacey. It is time to have done with cards if sermons prevail. How did your ladyship like that game?
If I were at Portsmouth, I should be at the Assembly Ball, perhaps.
But you do not wish yourself at Portsmouth, will you?
No, Fanny. I shall have enough of it, and of dancing too, when I cannot have you. Anyway, the girls there turn up their noses at anybody who has not a commission. You remember the Gregorys? They are grown up amazing fine girls, but they will hardly speak to me, because Lucy is courted by a lieutenant.
Oh, shame. But never mind, William. It is no more than what the greatest admirals have all experienced. And there will be an end to it when you are a lieutenant.
I begin to think I shall never be a lieutenant. Everybody gets made but me.
Oh, my dear William, do not be so desponding. I am sure my uncle will do everything in his power to get you made. He knows of what consequence it is.
Hush, he's coming this way. Are you fond of dancing, Fanny?
Yes, very. Only I am soon tired.
Have you never any balls at Northampton? I should like to be your partner once more. I am a pretty good dancer in my way, but I dare say you are a better. Is not Fanny a good dancer, sir?
William.
I'm sorry to say that I am unable to answer your question, William. I have never seen Fanny dance since she was a little girl.
Come, Fanny. What are you about? Don't you see your aunt is going? Quick! I cannot bear to keep good old Wilcox waiting. You should always remember the coachman and horses. My dear Sir Thomas, we have settled it that the carriage should come back for you and Edmund and William.
Yes, Mrs. Norris. I believe I settled it myself.
You're sure, Miss Price? Allow me.
Thank you.
William's desire of seeing Fanny dance made more than a momentary impression on his uncle.
He spoke of the balls at Northampton, but the fatigue would be too much for Lady Bertram. A dance at home would be more eligible, just before Christmas, before Edmund and William leave us. Invitations must be sent out at once.
A ball? What should I wear? I must wear the amber cross which William brought from Sicily. But I have nothing but a bit of ribbon to fasten it to. Would that be allowable at a ball?
Edmund was at this time occupied in the consideration of two important events now at hand.
Ordination and matrimony.
He was to receive ordination during the Christmas week at Peterborough. Half his destiny would then be determined, but the other...
I know my own mind, but I am not always certain that I know Miss Crawford's. There are points on which we do not quite agree. Her decided preference of a London life, for one.
Thursday was the day of the ball. And on Wednesday morning, Fanny, still undecided as to what she ought to wear, walked down to the parsonage for a private discussion. Miss Crawford had been just setting out to call on her with the same purpose.
Now, what shall you have by way of necklace? Shall not you wear your brother's cross?
Yes, but I only have a piece of ribbon to fasten it to. But if I had a
pocket... You are to choose one of these. I was bringing them up to the house for you to see.
Oh, Miss Crawford, I couldn't...
Yes, indeed, you must take one for the cross and keep it for my sake. You see what a collection I have, more than I ever use.
Oh, it's too valuable a gift. Oh,
it's only an old necklace. You must oblige me. This one is prettily worked, is it not?
Perhaps it is the one she least wishes to keep. Yes, it is very pretty.
Let me put it round you. There. See how well it looks. Now, not another word.
Thank you very much, Miss Crawford. When I wear it, I shall think of you and how very kind you were.
You must think of somebody else, too. Henry. For it was his choice in the first place. He gave it to me.
Oh, no, I cannot. It must not be. To take the gift of another person, of a brother. I cannot.
My dear child, do you think Henry will fancy you did not come honestly by it?
No.
Or perhaps you suspect that what I'm doing is with his knowledge and at his desire.
Oh, no, to be sure. I never thought of such a thing.
Then say no more against it, I entreat you. Such a trifle is not worth half so many words.
You are very kind.
Suppose, though, that Mr. Crawford did have some concern in this necklace. He tries so hard to please me now. He's something like what he was to my cousins.
Edmund.
Fanny. I was making use of your inkstand to explain my business here. To beg your acceptance of this little trifle. A chain for William's cross. You ought to have had it a week ago, but I've only just received it at Northampton. I hope you will like it, Fanny. I endeavoured to consult the simplicity of your taste. At any rate, I hope you will consider it as a token of the love of one of your oldest friends.
Oh, cousin, stop a moment. Pray stop. I cannot attempt to thank you. Your goodness in thinking of me is beyond
all... This is all you want to say, Fanny.
No, no, it is not. I want to consult you.
Very well.
Oh, this is beautiful indeed. Oh, this is precisely what I wish for. It will exactly suit my cross. Oh, cousin, you do not know how acceptable it is.
My dear Fanny, you feel these things a great deal too much. Believe me, I have no pleasure in the world so complete, so unalloyed as that of contributing to yours. What is it that you want to consult me about?
Oh, yes. Well, it is about this necklace, which Miss Crawford insisted on giving me. And
Miss Crawford, did she? What a coincidence that we should both have the same thought.
Yes, cousin, but I may return it now, may I not? It was her brother's present to her, and I have no need now.
Return it, my dear Fanny, upon no account. It would be mortifying her severely. She must not suppose it not wanted. And its having been her brother's gift ought not to affect your keeping it. It is handsomer than mine, and fitter for a ballroom.
No, it is not handsomer, and for my purpose not half so fit. The chain will agree with William's cross beyond all comparison, better than the necklace.
For only one night, Fanny. Wear the necklace at the ball, and keep the chain for commoner occasions. I would not have the shadow of a coolness arise between the two dearest objects I have on earth.
I am one of his two dearest objects. But the other, the first. He has never spoken so openly before. Oh, it is a stab. His convictions are decided. He will marry Miss Crawford.
This is no more than what you have long perceived.
No. But it is a stab. Oh, but I am one of his two dearest objects. Oh, if I could believe she deserved him, it would be, oh, far more tolerable. But he is deceived in her. He gives her merits which she has not. And here is the note he was writing.
Oh, my very dear Fanny, you must do me the favour to accept me. It is the dearest part of the gift.
The enthusiasm of a woman's love.
My very dear Fanny.
Thursday, predestined to hope and enjoyment, came, and brought a letter from Mr. Crawford to William.
I am obliged to go to London tomorrow, and thought you might accept a place in my carriage. I mean to be in town by my uncle's dinner.
Dinner hour, and you're invited to dine with us.
Oh, William, it will spare you the fatigue of going up by the mail.
It will be like going up with dispatches.
Fanny had too many agitations and fears to have half the enjoyment in anticipation of the ball which she ought to have had.
Fanny, you look tired and fagged. You have been walking too far.
No, I have not been out at all.
Then you have had fatigues within doors which are worse. You would better have gone out.
Yes, cousin.
I come from Dr. Grant's. You may guess my errand. I wish to engage Miss Crawford for the first two dances.
Oh, and did you meet with success?
Yes, but she says it is to be the last time that she will dance with me.
Oh, no.
She never has danced with a clergyman, she says, and she never will. She is not serious, I think, I hope, but I would rather not hear it. And tomorrow I leave home, you know.
Yes, I am very sorry that anything has occurred to distress you. This ought to be a day of pleasure.
Oh, yes, I am only vexed for a moment. But, Fanny, let me talk to you a little. You are a kind, kind listener. I have been pained by her manner this morning and cannot get the better of it. I know her disposition to be as sweet and faultless as your own, but sometimes...
If you only want me as a listener, cousin, I will be as useful as I can. But, excuse the liberty, do not tell me anything now which you may be sorry for. The time may come...
Dearest Fanny, you are all considerate thought, but the time will never come. The chances grow less and less. And if it should... But you have always known my opinion of her. I have never been blinded.
No.
How many times have we talked over her little errors? You need not fear me. I have almost given up every serious idea of her.
Then I cannot be afraid of hearing anything you wish to say, cousin. Tell me whatever you like.
Hurry and get dressed, Fanny. You must not be late, you know.
Yes, Aunt.
Fanny, you must keep two dances for me, any two that you like.
Oh.
Except the first.
Fanny had nothing more to wish for, and she began to dress with much of the happy flutter which belongs to a ball. And when she came to the necklaces, her good fortune seemed complete.
Miss Crawford's is too large to go through the ring of the cross. Edmund's chain must be worn. But perhaps it would be right to wear the necklace as well.
Annie, are you engaged for the first dances?
Oh, yes, sir. To Mr. Crawford.
Good. Where is he? Hi, yes. Over there. You two must lead the way, Fanny, and open the ball.
Oh, I thought Edmund... Oh, pray excuse me.
No, Fanny, it must be so, my dear. Come with me.
The ball began. It was rather honour than happiness to Fanny for the first dance, at least, till she could suppose herself no longer looked at. After the two first dances, Miss Crawford came to her.
My dear Miss Price, how well you look tonight.
Oh, Miss Crawford. Oh, you see, the cross would not fit on your necklace. And Edmund gave me this chain, so I decided that...
Well, that was like himself.
No other man would have thought of it. I honour him beyond expression.
Yes. Well, and perhaps you can tell me why my brother goes to town tomorrow.
He says he has business, but will not tell me what. The first time he has ever denied me his confidence. Now I must apply to you.
Indeed, Miss Crawford, I do not know. Only that he is kind enough to take William with him.
Well, then, I must suppose it to be purely for the pleasure of talking of you, by the way.
Why does she not smile? What an odd, over-anxious creature she is. She must be pleased with Henry's attentions.
Fanny had a good deal of enjoyment in the course of the evening, but Henry's attentions had very little to do with it. She was happy whenever she looked at William. She was happy in knowing herself admired, and she was happy in having two dances with Edmund to look forward to.
I am worn out with civility. I have been talking incessantly all night about nothing. But with you, Fanny, there may be peace. Let us have the luxury of silence.
With pleasure, cousin.
And they went down their two dances together with such sober tranquillity as might satisfy any looker-on that Sir Thomas had been bringing up no wife for his younger son. The ball was over. Breakfast was soon over. The last kiss was given, and William was gone. And Fanny sat and cried con amore fraternal.
Goodbye, dearest William.
Soon after the second breakfast, Edmund mounted his horse for Peterborough, and then all were gone.
Oh, this must be learned to be endured. He will soon be always gone.
We miss our two young men.
Yes, Uncle.
They're all going away. I wish they would not. I wish Julia would not go to town with Maria.
But, my dear, you know we agreed that it was best for them both that she should go.
Yes. Sir Thomas, I'm very glad we took Fanny as we did, for now the others are away, we feel the good of it.
Very true. Fanny is now a very valuable companion. If we have been kind to her, she's now quite as necessary to us.
Yes. And it is a comfort to think that we shall always have her.
She will never leave us, I hope. Till invited to some other home that may reasonably promise her greater happiness than she knows here.
And that is not likely to be, Sir Thomas. Who should invite her? Besides, I cannot do without her.
A week passed. Mr. Crawford returned from town and went to ask the Bertrams how they did, saying he would be back in 10 minutes.
My dear Henry, where can you possibly have been all this time?
Sitting with Lady Bertram and Fanny.
For an hour and a half?
I could not get away sooner. Fanny looked so lovely. Shall we walk? Mm. My mind is entirely made up, Mary. I am quite determined to marry Fanny Price.
Marry her?
Yes. You know with what idle designs I began. But I am fairly caught.
Well, lucky, lucky girl. What a match for her. And you will have a sweet little wife. All gratitude and devotion, exactly what you deserve. So this is what took you to London. You chose to consult the Admiral before you made up your mind.
No, Mary, you have not discovered my business yet.
Well, well. What are your plans? Does she know her own happiness?
No.
What are you waiting for?
For opportunity. Mary, she is not like her cousins. But I think I shall not ask in vain.
Henry Crawford was at Mansfield Park again next morning. The two ladies were in the breakfast room, and fortunately for him, Lady Bertram was on the very point of quitting it.
I will tell Bagley to let Sir Thomas know, Mr. Crawford.
Miss Price, he is made. Your brother is a lieutenant. I had the infinite satisfaction of congratulating you on his promotion. Here are the letters which announce it. This moment come to hand.
Mr. William Price's commission as second lieutenant of His Majesty's sloop. Right. Secretary of the First Lord, Sir Charles, Admiral Crawford.
My uncle has exerted himself, as I knew he would after seeing your brother. He was delighted with
him. Has this been all you're doing? Oh, good heaven. How very, very kind. Have you really... Oh, I beg your pardon, but I'm bewildered. Oh, Mr. Crawford, we are infinitely obliged to you. Dearest, dearest William, oh, my uncle ought to know it.
Please, you must not go. You must allow me to... Miss Price, Fanny, please sit down again. Everything I have done for William is because of my excessive and unequalled attachment to you. You have created sensations which my heart has never known before.
Oh, no, Mr. Crawford, this is nonsense. This is a sort of talking which is very unpleasant to me.
But you don't understand, my love. I am offering you everything. my hand, my heart, my fortune. Will you marry me? You must answer.
No, 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 this is all nonsense. Your kindness to William makes me more obliged to you than words can express, but I do not want... I cannot bear such...
The breakfast room, you say,
oh, buddy. Good heaven, my uncle, you must excuse me.
She rushed out at an opposite door from the one her uncle was approaching and fled to the east room.
Beyond belief. Inexcusable. Incomprehensible. He can do nothing without a mixture of evil. And what can he mean by it? Oh, but William is a lieutenant. That is beyond a doubt. I will think of that and forget all the rest. Mr. Crawford will certainly never address me so again.
In episode 2 of Mansfield Park, dramatised by Elizabeth Proud, Hannah Gordon played Jane Austen and Amanda Root, Fanny. Michael Williams played Sir Thomas Bertram, Jane Lapoterre, Mrs. Norris, Robert Glenister, Edmund Bertram, and Louise Jameson, Lady Bertram. Mary Crawford was played by Teresa Gallagher, Henry Crawford by Andrew Wincott, and Mrs. Grant by Sharon Bayliss. Tom Bertram was Kim Wall, Mariah Bertram, Kathy Sarah, Julia Bertram, Tracy Wiles, Mr. Rushworth, Michael Onslow, Yates, Malcolm McKee, and William Price, Richard Curnow. The music was composed by Anthea Gomez and played by Christian Mackay, Jill Hartfield, Audrey Douglas, and Kathy Gittins. Mansfield Park was directed at Pebble Mill by Sue Wilson.